Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
High in the air, Brito back at the wall, adios, pelota!
That's the type of manager that I'd like to be, which is the same every day. They know what they're going to get. They're going to get energy, they're going to get accountability, they're going to get structure, and they're going to get support. And I'm going to bring those things to the dugout in the clubhouse regularly.
It takes hard work, and it takes humility, taking one step forward at a time, making one good baseball move after another, and I really feel like that's how we're going to get where we hope and intend to go.
You're listening to Bags and Brisby on Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 212 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy Baggerly. Andy, 212 doubles for the 1973 Giants. How about that?
They hit exactly on the nose, 212? You're kidding.
212. Really? Check out this outfield. Gary Matthews, 22 years old. Gary Maddox, 23 years old. Bobby Bonds, 27 years old, and they even have Dave Kingman, 24, on the bench. How are you going to screw that up if you're a team?
Wow. That's one of the things that just amazes me. I mean, that's some batting titles there. That's a lot of all-star appearances.
Gold gloves. I mean,
that's really impressive. But you know what? They didn't quite hit as many doubles that year as Gene Segura has in his career. Gene Segura is sitting on 231. The 250 is not far off. Load up the confetti cannons.
Oh, my gosh. Why does that make me laugh? I've said it before. That's Lucille Bluth and Gene Parmesan. Every time it gets me laughing.
Yeah, it's just such a great callback, Gene Segura. For anyone listening who doesn't understand, when the Giants were in Philadelphia last year, Gene Segura got his 200th double, and they, like, stopped the game, and he doffed his helmet to the crowd, and it was like, and they put it on the scoreboard, and we're all looking at each other like, what? Why? Why are we beautiful. Stopping the game?
So it's beautiful.
Yeah.
This is going to be a weird podcast, and I'll tell you why. I didn't watch any Giants last week. I watched, last night's game, which was a Monday. That's about it. I'm coming in fresh. So I'm counting on you, beat writer extraordinaire, to fill me in on every last detail of what happened.
Well, let's see. The Giants won a 3-game road series for the first time since mid-June. That's good.
Okay.
The Cubs aren't very good. We know that. There was a lot, I think, of positivity that came out of that road trip, even though they looked pretty flat in Milwaukee. It was a tough travel road trip. They had to turn around, obviously, and got in like at 4 in the morning, Monday night, or I guess Monday morning, and then had to play a game that day. So things are going to start to normalize for them, and I'm sure they're going to be very eager to have Thursday off this week because that was a tough travel trip, having to lose the travel day and then playing a doubleheader in Milwaukee and facing Corbin Burns doesn't make it any easier. He's about the best pitcher in baseball. But you know what? At Wrigley, you had a game where Logan Webb pitched great. Camilo Duvall got the save. Joey Bart caught a good game and hit a homer. David Villar hit a homer and a double. And all those guys are homegrown Giants. All of them are under the age of 25. All of them will probably be a part of the next good Giants team. And then the following day, they got another win, and Duvall got another save. And you're reminded that, hey, you know, Wilmer Flores is still pretty good. And, oh, you know, let's just go ahead and extend his contract. And that's what they did.
I was not surprised at all by the Wilmer Flores extension. And I know that there's going to be some consternation in the comments. Look, I wrote something about it and it published early this morning. There's already 68 comments about Wilmer Flores coming back because people don't want to think about the Giants returning with the same roster next year. There's a knee-jerk reaction to, you can't run it back again, are you nuts? At the same time, Wilmer Flores just makes so much sense for almost any other roster, and especially the way the Giants put one together.
Yeah, I mean, you heard Farhan Zaidi say yesterday that there were any number of clubs that were contacting them and wanted to trade for him. And, you could say, well, trade him and then re-sign him anyway. And, I guess they could have done that. But You know, they feel that Wilmer Flores is important. He's a glue guy. I think he and Evan Longoria are really glue guys for that clubhouse. And you know, we've talked about why it makes sense to bring Longoria back. And obviously they're big Wilmer Flores fans, and they've got him around for a couple more years. They've talked about how Jock Peterson, they've been in touch with his agent. They've talked about how they're going to tender a contract to Mike Yastrzemski. So yeah, you start to look and it's like, wait a second. Where's this blow up here? How are we going to remake this roster if you just bring everybody back? And, you know, I think it obviously not everyone's coming back. I think the writing is on the wall for Tommy La Stella that there's just not going to be a place for him on the roster next year. And, you know, they're trying out some other pieces, and we'll see but I tell you what, I thought it was funny, and I wrote about this the other day. Normally you have a David Villar come up and sort of intrigue you and think that he could be your everyday third baseman maybe, and that pushes out a veteran like Evan Longoria. Instead, I think the fact that Villar is showing some competence is a reason that you would bring back Longoria, because you've got, you know, a plan B behind him when he can't play, and you'd be bringing him back almost as a part-time player. And these moves do not preclude the Giants from doing anything else that's big or major, which I think they do have to do something big and something major. You know, they're not the Pirates. They're not the Royals. They can give $8 million to Longoria. They can give $6 million to Wilmer Flores, and it's not going to keep them from making other moves. So save the complaining for if they do not make those other moves.
This is probably where I'm at. I will say that there is a caveat where I don't think that the Giants can have so many limited players on the same roster, where you have guys you don't want to play in the field, and guys who are limited to DH, and guys who are going to be hurt a lot, and guys who can't play this position and that. Like, you start to build a 26-man roster, and if there's a lot of yeah buts with all these players, the dominoes start to fall, and you look up and you have guys up from the minors that you weren't expecting. You have, you're spreading yourselves really, really thin. So I think a guy like Flores makes sense, and then you can have a guy like Longoria who you can expect to miss 50 games, 60 games every year, but you can't build an entire roster out of yeah, but players. And that's the one caveat that I'll give to the Giants, is they're going to need some players who they expect to play 150 games come hell or high water.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think it's a mistake to bring back Jock Peterson if you're going to start him, you know, 80 plus times in the outfield. I think he's a DH, and you know, they've got to have a better outfield defense. He's not a good defender in the outfield. He's below average, and I don't think they can afford to have many of those guys. I think Mike Yastrzemski is an above average outfielder. Put him in a corner, he's a really good outfielder. He's a really good right fielder, and I think they need to have someone who's plus in center, and they need to they cannot allow what happened this year defensively to happen again. And if you start bringing back too many of those players and you put them in roles where you know, you're going to have, you end up with, you know, Jock Peterson in the outfield 80 times. That's a mistake. I think that is not going to be ideal.
I agree. And you can look at Yastrzemski and you combine him with Austin Slater. That's an outfielder to me. That is one outfield position. It can be left field. It can be right field. It can be whatever you want to do with it. Those two are complementary players. And then you can work on the rest of the outfield, but you can't start pushing them to center field and having Yastrzemski play against left-handers all the time, and you've got Jock Peterson in the outfield. You just can't do that. But you have a head start a little bit on a starting outfield where you have Slater, Yastrzemski. They have their flaws, but they also have their strengths. You can focus on the rest, whether it's Aaron Judge or something a little less splashy. That's what the Giants need to do. They can't mess around with so many limited players.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, and one guy I think fits in a lot of different roles is Tyro Estrada, who had himself a nice road trip, and a lot of people are talking him up in the season he's had. And, you know, again, not a perfect player, but I think he's having a better year than, say, like a Ketel Marte for the Diamondbacks, who's making a whole lot of money. So that tells you how valuable a player like him is. And he plays a pretty darn good shortstop. And I think that you're probably going to see, you know, Brandon Crawford, when he comes back, play a little bit less next year too. And probably Tyro will start more at short. short. I definitely see that happening.
Yeah, and you have to wonder what they're going to do with J.D. Davis. You know, all these guys are right-handed hitters that we're talking about, so it seems like they have that right-handed part of the platoon, at least in the infield, and what you're going to do with the DH. They have that locked down now with Flores and Estrada and J.D. Davis. It's going to be, how do you replace Tommy La Stella? What do you do with Lamont Wade Jr.? How are you going to get that left-handed production if you aren't bringing Jock Peterson back? I think that's going to be the focus of next year.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's going to be a big focus. And what they do with Wade is a great question. I don't know. I don't think they know. But I think that the main takeaway here is that they feel that, you know, a lot of things went wrong this year, but it doesn't mean that you just throw everybody out and start over. They still see a lot of value in some of the players that they have, and they just need to get better at catching the ball, and they need to hit more home runs, and they need to protect leads better in the bullpen, which are three pretty big areas to fix. Oh, and Carlos Rodon's a free agent, and they have to either re-sign him or replace him. But yeah, I mean, you start looking at, they're a little bit closer now, and Cole Waits got activated Monday, and he is officially the first guy from the Farhan Zaidi era to be drafted and to reach the major leagues, with the asterisk that Caleb Killian, who was traded to the Cubs for Chris Bryant, already did so. And so this is the first guy, Cole Waits, from the 19 draft class, to make the major leagues. And if he is the first guy to start that little wave happening, that's going to be encouraging, because I think Kyle Harrison will be on the team next year at some point. I think Casey Schmidt will be in the big leagues at some point next year. He's been really put himself on the map, and some people think he's an even better prospect than Marco Luciano at this point. So I mean, I've heard that from people inside and outside the organization. So they're getting closer to where they can start having those inputs, and that they haven't had that yet. And you could say that that's a development issue. You could say that that's, you know, there are people whose heads should roll because of that, or you could just say, you know what, pandemic, man, there was no minor league baseball in 2020. Let's be a little patient here. And I think that that's probably the biggest thing. But yeah, it's clearly what has to happen is they have to start getting those inputs from the minor league system, and then work around that with those big splashes and those big moves. And maybe they're getting a little closer to that now.
I don't want to make too much of it, because we haven't even seen a pitch from Cole Waits yet, but it feels to me like there's something like a demarcation line when it comes to Dominic Leone being released and Cole Waits coming up, because that's where the Giants are really deep, is with relievers who throw hard and might make an impact. They all have to work on their command one way or another, but we talk about them, it seems like, every podcast, whether it's Waits or RJ Dabovich or Randy Rodriguez. It feels like that is an area where the Giants could surprise sooner rather than later, get a lockdown bullpen from the internal options, and be a little bit better than maybe everyone's expecting.
Yeah, I think so. And you see that a lot of times in these sort of seasons that go awry. You reach that day where a team will cut ties with a couple of players. And I think back to I'm not sure what year it was, maybe 2011, when Aaron Rowand and Miguel Tejada were both taken off the roster on the same day. I want to say maybe it was the last day in August. And then they brought up people from the minor leagues, which I think it was like Brett Pill. I'm not sure who it was. yeah, you definitely have that sort of point that you reach where it's like, okay, we have these people on the roster basically as a courtesy at this point. We need to move on from that. And, sometimes you bring up people who are, you know, kind of red letter prospects, and other times you just bring up people that you want to give a little bit of a look to. And I think Cole Waits has deserved the look. He's filled up the strike zone more than he has. He still has some command issues. And we know that they're not going to call up people who are not ready to throw strikes. And so they, I guess, have a reasonable expectation now that he'll be able to throw strikes. And he's got a fastball that'll, you know, be 97 and touch 100. So that will work. You know, that's nice, right. Especially if he can throw his slider for strikes too. So, I'd be really interested to see how he does and just how he looks and whether he could put himself on the map to be a part of, you know, next year's opening day bullpen.
Yeah, I would think that is the idea, where you have Duvall and you have maybe Cole Waits sneaking in there. John Brebbia, I think, he doesn't have the high strikeout rate, but he seems like someone that they like quite a bit. After that, I'm not so sure that you're going to see Harlan Garcia back or even Tyler Rogers. I think there has to be some sense of there has to be an open-mindedness about the bullpen and how you attack it. And you can't just spend money and throw money at a bullpen in free agency. That never works. You don't want to give up your best prospects in trade. Like, you're a little bit limited as to what you can do if you're not going fully internal. But you have to be open-minded if you're in the Giants front office, because this bullpen this year has been a really, really rough struggle to watch.
Yeah, Tyler Rogers is really interesting to me because he had a good road trip and he threw strikes and he got ahead. And that's been the difference. If, you know, the ball has to be caught behind him and he still gets a lot of low exit velocity outs. So I don't think they're going to give up on Tyler Rogers. I think he is going to be part of the next bullpen, but, you know, maybe he's used in less leveraged roles until they know that he can get ahead of hitters and throw strikes again on a regular basis. Cause that's been the big key. I mean, strike one, man, I mean, you look at the data and the teams that throw strike one efficiency, it's like the Dodgers every year. They lead the majors in it. It's just, it makes a world of difference if you can just throw strike one. And Tyler Rogers, when he does that, is, I think, still one of the better setup relievers in baseball. Obviously, anytime he's struggling, it's going to be confirmation bias if you don't believe in the 70-mile-an-hour stuff. And he's had that kind of year.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Another guy who's opening eyes right now and looking good, he got a save last night. We're recording this on Tuesday. Scott Alexander, you mentioned him early. When you went to Sacramento, you heard whispers, yeah, this guy, he's going to be in the majors soon. And this was my introduction to Scott Alexander being in the minor leagues, to be honest. And I was going, really? Scott Alexander, the guy from the Dodgers who just kind of floated? Yeah, he seems like someone who can work because he has a really good sinker that he can command. And it's a funky pitch, and the Giants love their funky pitches.
They do, and he's got 5+ years of service time, but he won't get enough to get to 6, so he'll be in his last year of arbitration, so they've got club control over him, and he won't, you know, make, you know, a ton of money as a last year arb guy, because he hasn't, he's only had really two full seasons in the majors, with the Royals in 2017, and then with the Dodgers in 18, But yeah, I mean, he's a guy who throws with some deception, and as long as he can demonstrate some durability, I think he may end up being the replacement for Harlan Garcia on this roster next year. And Harlan is, I mean, hard to know what to make of him, because he didn't give up a run for 2 months, and then and then his numbers in June and July were terrible, and then in August, I think he had 18 strikeouts and one walk in 15 innings and gave up a couple homers, but you know that strikeout to walk will play, and then it's been rough again for him. So hard to know, but I think the key is, you know, Harlan Garcia is out of options, and that Scott Alexander, I have to believe, is also, well, he's got more than 5 years of service time, so it doesn't matter. You can't send him down to the minor leagues either. But I think they're going to have to get some more optionability in that bullpen.
I agree. Garcia is, to me, one of the most maddening pitchers on the team, because I'm never sure what to expect, like you said, from month to month. But he's not the most maddening pitcher the Giants have introduced this year. Junior Marte, to me, he can throw some of the nastiest pitches I have ever seen, and his ERA is 6.28, which he absolutely deserves. That guy drives me nuts, because he should be so good.
Yeah, and he throws really, really hard too.
Yes.
It's a little tough to fathom. I think he's got 37 strikeouts in 38 innings, and a lot of times you look at the stuff and it's like, how does anybody hit that? But He's averaging 1.5 base runner per inning. That's just too much. And, you know, he's averaging more than a hit per inning, which is just unfathomable. You think his stuff would be so difficult to square up. But I think they probably need to add a little deception there, maybe change an arm angle a little bit or find a way, because there are guys who throw really, really hard. But if you can see the ball the whole way, and I'm thinking of like a Hunter Green from the Reds, then, you know, they're going to give up a share of homers. And that's obviously something that's important to the Giants is home run suppression. I think it's probably the number one thing they look at after strikeout to walk ratio when they are, you know, prizing sort of relief targets. And so, yeah, he's going to have to either keep the ball in the ballpark somehow, and maybe that means adding some deception.
Now, do you think the Giants can improve the defense enough to stick with a bunch of lower strikeout relievers? Because they have Tyler Rogers. John Brebbia doesn't have a strikeout per inning. Garcia doesn't have a strikeout per inning. Zach Littell is under 8 per 9 innings. Sam Long isn't striking out a ton of guys. Do you think it's possible? Because we know the Giants are going to try and do their darndest to improve their defense this offseason. Is it possible to get a defense in place next year that's good enough to carry guys like this? Or do you need to stack the deck with guys like Cole Waits and maybe some more high strikeout arms?
That's a great question. And maybe they get to a point where they realize it's easier to build a bullpen of swing and miss guys than it is to really appreciably fix the defense. But I think regardless, they already have a rotation that is built that way. Logan Webb's coming back. Alex Cobb is coming back. Those guys are definite ground ball pitchers. So I think that, you know, it probably is going to be really important for them to fix the defense anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And the big question to me is what you do with Brandon Crawford. I know we talked about this last week, so I don't want to rehash that too much. But every time I go on Baseball Reference, my eyes just go foomp right to him. Because if he is not a superlative fielder in his age 36 season, how much offense are you going to get out of him? He had a couple of great at-bats last night, but at the same time, it's such a tricky spot because you know how valuable he can be, how valuable he just was. But next year, what can you expect from him? I don't have the answers, and I'm not sure if anyone does.
No, and it probably is going to be one of those things where they have to, you know, think about, you know, having some other alternatives. And, you know, whether that's, you know, signing someone like a Trey Turner who can, you know, play short and spell Crawford sometimes, and then also, you know, maybe move over to second base when Crawford's out there. I don't know. You say, well, he wouldn't want to sign and have a role like that. Give the guy enough money and he'll play. He'll sell hot dogs for you, right? I do think that they probably will have to have a little more coverage there, which, frankly, they haven't had the entire time Brandon Crawford's been a Giant. I mean, he's never had a backup who could, you know, be an everyday player or somebody who, you know, where there's not a pretty significant drop-off. I think Joaquin Arias is probably the best backup he's had, unless you count now Tyro Estrada. So it's kind of been an ongoing issue for the Giants for a long, long time. And Brandon Crawford's played a heck of a lot of baseball and been very, very durable. But obviously it's been a difficult season for him.
Just because I don't want to forget this, and I apologize for the jarring shift in the inelegant segue, I just wanted to ask you a trivia question. Who is leading the Giants in batting average right now?
Oh, my. Wow.
Minimum 75 plate appearances.
Minimum 75 plate appearances. Okay, well, I don't want this to be my final guess, but I'm thinking Luis Gonzalez has put the bat on the ball a lot. Boy, it's not Yastrzemski, that's for sure. It's not Jock. David VR doesn't have enough plate appearances yet, right?
Right.
Right, right,
right. Right. Actually, he does. He does. So you can't have David VR.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go with Luis Gonzalez.
It's Jock Peterson.
What? Really?
267. Yeah, I saw this yesterday. Actually, Austin Slater is at 267. So I guess Peterson went down to 267 recently. So this wasn't as funny as when I looked it up yesterday. But yeah, Jock Peterson, he's the guy who gets more hits than anyone on the team. And I just want to throw this out there. I get that it's better to have a high on base percentage than it is a high batting average. And the Giants have a lineup filled with guys who can take walks and grind out at bats and get the pitcher out of the game early. It's not that fun to watch, though. I could go for a 300 hitter or two next year. I think that's a worthwhile goal.
So I think a week or two ago, I was going through all kinds of offensive numbers, and I was playing around with just, you know, where is this offense? Where has it landed? And basically, it's a league average offense, and it's got league average power. And I think last year, it was obviously one of the best offenses in the National League. It was the number one power hitting team in the National League. And this is not a team that can win with a league average offense, given where the bullpen is, given, you know, the defensive mistakes. This has to be a team that outhits its mistakes as it's currently formed, and they haven't been able to do that. But one thing that I noticed that was just crazy is that the Giants led the major leagues in plate appearances with the bases loaded. Led the major leagues. You think about like the Blue Jays or some of the, you know, the Astros, some of the high octane offenses, and the Giants have created more of those situations, and it kind of makes sense the more you think about it, because they walk a ton. They have a lot of guys who aren't going to score.
Station to station.
Right? If it's requires moving more than 90 feet on a hit. And so they load them up a lot. And they were doing okay with the bases loaded. It was like, you know, 255 average. You know, they'd knocked in like 100 and something runs. It was the most in the majors. Obviously, that's, you know, because they had the most opportunities. But it's not like they were terrible with the bases loaded. But they're not hitting those three-run homers that they hit last year. So they're loading the bases a ton, and they're sneaking out some runs, but they're not putting up the big crooked numbers. And I just thought that was fascinating, and it kind of is almost emblematic of just what this offense has done this year.
Yeah, it's a confusing offense because they can do quite a bit right. You've covered Giants teams that couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat, and I've complained about them on the old internet, and this is not one of those teams. They can struggle against Corbin Burns. They can have their moments, but they generally work counts and do some of the things well. And it's not that difficult to imagine the Giants having a slightly above average offense next year. Maybe if they get someone like Aaron Judge, they could go even further. But it's also not that hard to imagine the Giants having a good rotation next year, where you have Logan Webb in place. Alex Cobb is looking great lately. And then you get someone, maybe you resign Rodon or you sign another pitcher. It's not that hard to imagine. And then that leaves the bullpen and the defense. I don't know. Maybe I'm too close to all of this and I'm not seeing the forest for the trees, but it's not that hard to imagine something better than this without that much of a remake or a do-over.
Yeah, and I agree with a lot of that. And by the way, I did just look it up as I was listening to you, and it's now 174 plate appearances with the bases loaded. That leads the majors, and number two is the Dodgers at 159.
Wow.
the fewest in the majors is the Pirates with 62. So,
whoa.
I mean, I know, it's nutty. There's only, the league average looks to be around maybe 117, 119, right around there. The Mets are 15th with 117. So the Giants have had 174 plate appearances with the bases loaded, and yet they're, you know, pretty much a league average offense in terms of runs scored per game. So, yeah, that's just, wow. That's kind of like a snapshot, isn't it?
Yeah, that is wild. That is, the Pirates only having, 63? That sounds really boring.
The Braves have had 88. That's it. And the Braves score a ton of runs.
Well, I guess that's because they have some team speed on there, where they got a bunch of guys who are like 23 and can run like the Dickens.
Yeah, those whippersnappers. Yeah. Yeah, must be nice. Must be nice. Youth must be nice.
Yeah, that is the Braves. When you look at that lineup and you've got, gosh, what do we do with Ozzie Albies when he comes back? We're not sure if we have room for him because we've got all these young players in the lineup. That's rude. That's ridiculous. I rebuke that.
Yeah, champagne problems, as they say, although maybe nice glass of Southern Comfort instead.
Ooh, you know, one time I got Southern Comfort because I thought it was bourbon.
This
was early in my drinking days, and I was like, oh, I'm going to have a whiskey and Coke tonight. And I got Southern Comfort and Coke. That's gross. Why does Southern Comfort exist?
Is it peach schnapps? Is that what it is, basically?
No, it's just like a really sweet version, like a bourbon-y, sugary. It's gross. It's the grossest thing I think I've ever tasted.
I love how you just stop yourself in the middle of the description. description and was like, let's just skip to the end. It's gross.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just too refined and I'm a snob now.
Yeah, well, you can't make a fuzzy navel without Southern comfort. So, gosh, how would I have gotten through college without having fuzzy navels? So,
what's a fuzzy? I mean, I've heard of it. It's like a Harvey Wallbanger. I know it exists, but what is a fuzzy navel?
It's Southern comfort and orange juice, basically.
So that's gross.
It's kind of like a really sweet screwdriver. Yeah, but that's what a fuzzy navel is.
I have a headache right now just listening to that.
Yeah, it's not great.
Would you, if you could go back to college and tell yourself, hey, maybe mix in a glass of water, would you do that? Because I would.
I think I would. Yeah. No, I probably would. You know what? I wasn't a super bingy, heavy drinker in college, but you know, you're experimenting with your limits, and sometimes you go a little beyond where you should. But yeah, no, I definitely think of like, when I think of like fraternity parties, I think of, you know, people drinking like Midori and really awful. It's like, why are you drinking that? Just stick with beer. It's fine.
Yeah. I wasn't a big, heavy drinker in college. I experimented with like Marcus Jensen, Dante Powell, Wilson Delgado, Doug Mirabelli. This is what I spent my college doing, is just watching like the 1996, 1997 Giants. Left some lingering effects. Like, it's why I'm here now.
Yeah. That leaves a permanent brain pattern on you. I was talking to, I was talking with Adam Copeland on KNBR the other day, and he was mentioning, you know, the watching a team in September that's out of it, and you're all excited for the players who come up, and he starts dropping Jason Ellison on me, and then he drops an Adam Shibala on me.
Yes.
And I said, that is some knowledge, man, dropping Adam Shibala. And he left me with Justin Knadler, and then I just have to go. I can't. I'm overcome. I'm overcome with emotion now.
He is so good at that. He is obviously the best radio host when it comes to that stuff. I'm not even sure if Brian Murphy can compete, because Copeland loves that stuff. He loves just going in and getting like a. He's not just going to drop one Edward Guzman. He's going to drop an Edwards Guzman on you.
Oh yeah, there's multiple Guzmans. That's for sure. And I had to mention that if he was a big fan of Ben Copeland, since they have the same last name.
Sure.
Ben Copeland, the answer to the trivia question, who was the Giants' first pick in the 2000, would that have been the 2005 draft, maybe 2006? Yeah. I mean, fourth round. They didn't pick until the fourth round that year. That's just amazing to think back.
On purpose, right? That's the year where they're like, no, we don't want that first round pick. We're going to sign Michael Tucker. Or was it a different one?
No, you know what's crazy about that? I mean, the part that people forget is, you know, before you had to offer arbitration to the free agent, you know, it wasn't a qualifying offer, but you had to offer arbitration to a potential free agent. And if you did that, then you attach the draft pick compensation. And so Michael Tucker wasn't going to make, you know, a ton of money, but he probably would have made like $6 or $7 million in arbitration. And there's no way the Kansas City Royals were going to offer it to him. No right. way. And the Giants signed Michael Tucker one day before the Royals were going to have to make that call. And they did it on purpose so that the Royals would then obviously offer arbitration, knowing that the player's already signed elsewhere. And the Giants would, they punted a first round draft pick. And it was a different time, I know, but it is just impossible to believe that a team would do that now. It's just alien.
Still drives me nuts. Still drives me absolutely nuts. All right, we are out of time. I'm just going to drop what out of the four plate appearances that Julio Ramirez had for the 2005 Giants, which one stands out for you?
Probably the second one.
He did have a hit, so there was one of them in there, but I did not remember that Julio Ramirez existed. Angel Chavez was on that team as well. Didn't remember him. All right.
Yameed Hodd. I just leave you with Yameed Hodd.
That's like my go-to when it's like a random Giants backup catcher. Justin Knadler's good, though, so I'll go with that one in the future. But Yameed Hodd, I love that name. All right. This has been episode 212 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. We will be back on Thursday. It's an off day, and we will talk about what happened in the Braves, the last two games, the series finale. We will see you then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.